Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Yankee Stadium.
As the guy hits the deep right field, that ball is going, blowing it in, gone. He drives the authority. Now I don't believe it.
That ball is high, it is far, it is gone.
Yo, what up, Yankee fans? Welcome to the Bullpen Betty Show. The All-Star break is past and things are starting to heat up as the Bombers start the second half. We're heading down to the Lower East Side today to talk baseball and wet our whistle with New York punk pioneer Handsome Dick Manitoba. So pull up a bar stool and order a beer, for she's Betty, I'm Gigo, and this is Episode 4 of the Bullpen Betty Show.
Hi everybody, welcome to Bullpen Betty, episode 4 of season 2. I am sitting in world famous Manitoba's bar on Avenue B.
At least Lower East Side famous.
and wait, is that Gigo? Is that you?
It is me. I have returned, the prodigal son.
You have returned from every other sport aside from baseball?
Yeah, kind of.
What do you mean, kind of? What else? You mean hockey's over, soccer's over, horse racing's over?
Yeah, I'm back. I'm here.
What else do you have?
Well, you can't blame me. The Rangers went to the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, what? Yeah. 20 years since they made that before. You had to watch that. The World Cup is only once every 4 years.
Right.
You know, so. And baseball was horrible. The Yankees were hard to watch for the first half.
Well, yeah, right. Well, you were off reveling in the Rangers and Argentina, but sorry how that both of those worked out. I was hard at work, I don't know, cheering on the Yankees,
hard
freaking
at work.
Out.
I saw a video of you stalking Ellsbury.
I think, well, if you saw the videos... I put them on our Facebook page. They're also on YouTube. And
did you find him?
I did. I believed him, actually. I just picked the nicest building in the general vicinity where I heard he lived, and I assumed that's where he lived. But that doorman had no idea. I really don't think. So I did that. I also showed the world that girls can hit baseballs. It's not only 35 miles an hour, but 70 miles an hour.
That's like a fast softball pitch.
Shut up. You get in there and hit a 70-mile-an-hour baseball, you jerk. And I even went to some games. So, anyway, speaking of games and Yankee Stadium, I guess we had such a difficult time because we have no pitchers.
Four of our five starters from the opening day roster, the first 25, are gone. And it looks like... Well, we might get one back, maybe two back, right? Pineda looks like he's coming back.
Pintar Ada.
Yeah, Pintar Ada. He's starting a rehab start, I think, this week. So he looks like we'll have him back in August. Tanaka, elbow tear. I mean, he saw three different doctors, and they all said not to do Tommy John, but to just give him rest, 6 weeks rest, and see what happens. And then he should be able to come back. But I read today that he's still feeling a little pain. Mm-hmm. If this rest doesn't work, it's Tommy John. If he gets Tommy John, that means we won't even see him next year. CeCe's done for the year. Nova had Tommy John, so he's done for the year. I mean, mm-hmm. Kuroda's been the only one from opening day, still around.
Yep. Yeah, and Kuroda's been doing pretty well overall.
I mean, and I got to admit that the young guys they brought up are all doing good. Yep. Phelps has done good. Shane Green's doing good. Yep. Keith McCarthy's doing good. So you can't even blame the pitching for our situation.
No. It was the hitting, really.
And these are the guys that we thought was going to were, at least right. I thought, you know, Beltran, McCann, Ellsbury, you know, all these moves they made.
Right.
And, I mean, Ellsbury, you got to give it to him. He's been great the whole...
Yeah, so Ellsbury, Tex, and Gardy, floated us on, you know...
When Tex could get on the field.
Right, when he's not injured.
His problem is getting him on the field.
Right. But I like him better as a player and a person the older he gets, I feel like.
Okay.
I do. I just feel like he's a little bit more in it, positive, a positive being when he's, playing when. And we all know that how I feel about Ellsbury, seeing how he has been stalked by me. However, he's still no Curtis Granderson.
Who? Ellsbury? I'll take Ellsbury over Curtis
I don't
Granderson
mean
any day on any team.
I don't just mean his performance as a player. I just mean the charisma.
Charisma? You think Granderson had charisma?
Well, yes.
He's the vanilla as you can get. He's kind of boring. That's why he's with the Mets.
He's actually not at all vanilla, but... anyway, we'll have to agree to disagree because you know that I will never get over Curtis Granderson, who, in fact, I might be seeing soon.
But more
on that later.
Yeah.
All right, so the All-Star Game, the Derek Jeter All-Star Game.
The Derek Jeter All-Star Game. After 20 years, his last year, it was his 14th All-Star Game. And it was cool. I think they did a really good job of it.
Yep, I got chills.
He got the big ovations. They made a big deal when they took him out. They played New York, New York. He got two hits. I think all around it was pretty good.
Yeah, you know? And they played the Respect Nike commercial, which I love.
Right.
Except for the Jay-Z part. It's awesome.
Yeah, but the blurry Mr. Methead kind of made up for it.
That was like the greatest thing that has ever happened in a commercial like this century, I think.
And the American League won the game, so Game 7 of the World Series will be held at Yankee Stadium.
And Trout got the MVP.
Trout, right, the new face of the league, right?
Yep.
Taking over for Jeter. It was good. I think it was all done.
The new face and huge neck of the league.
Yeah. I think the only misstep was not doing something about Tony Gwynn.
Yep. You know? Tony Gwynn, I mean, they really should have said it. Something.
There. Yeah, something. Put his picture up on the scoreboard or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, they blew
it. I mean, Carter's, you know, do a weekend at Bernie's. Sorry, Zach, tasteless. Get him out there on the mound one last time, or the plate one last time. For old time's sake, he would have wanted it that way.
For old time's
sake. And Cespedes won the Home Run Derby for the second year in a row.
For the second year in a row, right?
But, I mean, let's not even talk about the Oakland A's because they're like a wrecking machine.
They're good. They're good. They're very good. They're the team to beat. We'll see.
Yep. Well, Mike Trout is nipping at their heels, so we'll see. And then we do a trade where, you know...
Yes.
Yang Hervis Solarte, everybody's favorite player in April, is now no longer with the Yankees.
Right. I think we have like 7 days left to the trading deadline.
Yep.
And so this is when Brian Cashman has to earn his money. Mm-hmm. And he made, I think, a great trade. I mean, he's a guy I've been telling you since the beginning of the year that I think we should get him.
Chase Headley.
Chase Headley from the San Diego Padres is now a New York Yankee. We gave up... Yangervis Solarte and a bag of peanuts. Actually, it was DePaul. He's a single-A pitcher.
Right.
Who is projected to be, you know, someday a major league reliever.
Right.
Oh, no big deal. And so we got Headley and $1 million cash. And he's got $4.5 million left on his contract for this year. Actually, $3.5 million because that million makes up for it. So he's not, we don't even have him for next year. He's a rental player. You know, and he's a great player. I mean, In 2012, he hit 30 home runs, 31 home runs, something like that, and 115 RBIs.
Wow.
I mean, he was an all-star. He was great.
And his wife and then,
McCarthy's wife.
McCarthy's wife. They were so happy they were on the Yankees because they both shaved.
They both shaved.
Well, and then Kelly Johnson went on the DL
today.
As well.
Yeah, that's all right. I mean, we have, you know, Chase Utley, so.
Yep.
The only issue is that because Tex is out all the time, he can't get to play first base. Yeah, we'll see. Which is good because he's got Cervelli in, and Cervelli's been doing really well lately.
Yeah, right, I love Cervelli.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm
he's a passionate South... Is he South American?
Yeah, he's Venezuelan.
That's South America, right?
Yes, it is.
So, that's pretty much the whole season in a nutshell.
And this seems like the perfect time or not, because I see our host, Handsome Dick Manitoba, like you said, we were Manitoba's Bard, named after him, singer of the Dictators. I see him heading our way. I'm going to go out and get us both a adult beverage, as they say on TV.
Yes.
What do you want?
I want a Stoli vanilla and club soda with a lime.
Jeez, you're going to really make me order that? Dick, you can have my seat to have a conversation. I'll be back in a little bit.
Here at Manitoba's Bar in Avenue B in the East Village with Handsome Dick Manitoba.
Avenue B as in Bruce. lead singer of The Dictators, the early New York City punk rock band from back in the Mud Club, Max's Kansas City days.
Well, I call it the CBGB days.
And the CBGB days.
But I was a regular at the Mud Club. As a matter of fact, the guy who ran the Mud Club gave me a card in my wallet which said, "God bless Handsome Dick, let him in for free at all times." The guy's name was Steve Maas, M-A-A-S.
What happened to Steve Maas?
I don't know. I think he's still around.
Yeah?
I think he's somewhere in the Facebook world. But I think he's still a survivor.
Handsome Dick also hosts his own radio show on Sirius XM, right?
I started out as lead singer of the Dictators.
Right.
Three of the original Dictators with the what's it called when someone gives you the pat on the back, the...
Pass the baton?
No. It's three original Dictators and a fourth has given us his...
Blessing?
Yes, thank you. The fourth has given us his blessing and the fifth just went to the other side of the universe. So we're just to put a hair between the totally original band, we are now calling ourselves the Dictators NYC.
Oh, okay.
Because the Dictators, as it was, is locked in a box and put away for all eternity, and it's a wonderful thing.
Right.
And we don't want to alienate any of our fans
right. By
talking shit about it. We wanted to say it came. It had a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it was wonderful. And now we're on to something else.
All right. So there you have it. That's news that I don't normally get on my baseball podcast. So
you brought up the Dictators.
I'm glad to get it. Yeah, well, that's why I'm interviewing you. So actually, you're born in the Bronx, right?
I hate to do this to you.
Yeah?
I was born in a hospital in Manhattan.
Oh.
I was conceived.
Right.
I came out of the womb in a hospital in Manhattan.
Where?
Yes,
what hospital?
It's not there anymore.
The hospital I was born in is not there anymore either.
Which one?
It was called Leroy Hospital.
Lemoy?
Leroy.
Hey, Leroy, what? Your mama, she calling you, man.
not the same hospital.
This was Jewish Memorial Hospital.
Oh, okay.
It was like 180th or 190th Street near Broadway.
Okay, way uptown.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Was not there, and I spent
that's almost the Bronx.
I spent my childhood in the Bronx.
And is that why you're a lifelong Yankee fan? And I'm looking at the tattoo to prove something.
And I just got stuff added onto it.
Yeah, it looks like it's brand new.
Well, the thing was, the add-on, I wanted it to look like this was what I went in for.
Okay.
So, yes, I'm a lifelong Yankee fan because in my philosophical world, you should be what your father is. Baseball is so much about that to me. And I grew up in the Bronx, and my father took me to Yankee games. And one of the great moments of my life, when I was overwhelmed with emotion, was the fact that I love baseball so much, I never kind of thought I was really going to have a kid. I have this beautiful gift from God, healthy son, who I happen to name Jake Koufax. And on my first game there with him, I was overwhelmed with this emotion of the Bronx, baseball, my dad, my son.
It was
coming back around again. And it was one of the most intense for me.
When was that?
I'm not a big spirit guy.
Right.
Past lives. But for me, it was like a Zen perfect moment. It was 2006, April or June 2006, a 4-1 win, Mike Mussina over Toronto.
Wow. So I was gonna
Jake was four.
So that's like one of your that's a pinnacle moment for you having to do with the Yankees. I was gonna ask you, can you pinpoint your first memory of the New York Yankees? Like your first great memory as a kid?
First is hazy. You know, it wasn't like I clearly remember where I was when John Lennon got murdered. It wasn't like that. It was more of a series of moments, and you know, 53 years later, it's understandable. I remember seeing Mickey Mantle get out of a car, a limo, whatever it was, walk into Yankee Stadium, and I looked up and I thought it was the closest living embodiment to God in human form that I have ever seen. And, you know, we'd go to the games. I just remember going to the games in the early 60s and running up to the front and going, Tom Trash, Tom, like the kids still do that. And he would look and wave at us, and I'd go running home to my mother, just like Frank Sinatra made every woman in the audience think he was singing to her. I said, Mama, Tom Trash waved to me.
It was all for you, right?
Well, those are some of my earliest memories.
So how did the Yankees help shape your identity as a young rocker dude, or young kid growing up in the city?
Well, I wasn't a young rocker dude at that time.
That you were just a young.
I was a kid.
Kid, right?
In 1964, the Big Bang, as Mr. Van Zandt likes to call it, the Beatles, 10 years old, completely paved a road for me from the first step to the end of my life.
Right.
That was the Big Bang. That was the beginning and the end. And the life is in the middle.
Okay.
And I don't connect the Yankees to that. It just happened to be that I'm from the Bronx.
Right.
I love the game of baseball. It was a bonding thing with Dad. And walking into that stadium, that feeling of walking down that, when you find your seats, you find that long, narrow, whatever, hallway or entrance, and the surround of the stadium hits you.
Right.
It's an absolutely glorious moment. This day.
I was going to say,
same way as flying in from LaGuardia and
right,
seeing the south end of
the city.
Manhattan.
Right. Right.
Still, 60 years.
So you even feel that way about the new stadium when you go?
Oh, absolutely.
Great. I'm glad.
The opening. I'm a realist after 60 years. I'm like, listen, let's keep everything back to the original. I mean, it's
right.
It's
things
stupid.
Change.
I grew up where you would get a seat for $1.50 in the grandstands,
right?
And you'd be sitting behind a pole.
Right.
Let's keep those poles because it was original. So then they took a place that shouldn't have been altered, and they altered it. Once you alter a
an icon or whatever.
No, what do they call that? You're gonna have to help me. In the city, when something cannot be touched because it's
like a historically preserved monument,
yeah,
or
well, they
a landmark,
it.
Basically.
Thank you.
Right.
It's been Yankee Stadium was not granted landmark status,
okay.
So they took the poles out. They played in Shea Stadium for 2 years, and the Yankees they fixed the landmark.
Right.
So it's not a landmark anymore.
Right, now it's something.
So
different.
Then the replica now looks more like the original, and change is inevitable. I wish they didn't tear down the old stadium.
Right.
That's right.
Left it as a museum or
something.
A venue or something. Right.
But the new one is more like an amusement park, which is
it's
the way.
A mall.
It's a mall, the way to the future. But
right.
It's also bigger, cleaner. It's a nicer place to take my kid.
Yeah.
It's a what? My kid saw Mariano Rivera. I told him one game, when he's 4, 5, 6 years old, we're leaving. We have to leave. He's a kid.
Right.
When he was 9, I want to leave that kid. You can't go because the great Rivera is coming in. And one day, you'll tell your kids or little kids or your grandchildren or whatever you have in life.
Right.
I saw the great Rivera pitch, just like I saw Whitey Ford pitch, just like I saw Mickey Mantle hit a baseball. And you need to do that. It's going to be important later.
Did he understand at 9 or?
He didn't have much of a choice.
Right.
To understand, I don't know. My hopefulness about understanding is that a lot of stuff goes in his head and he's at that stage where he's
right.
Too cool. And then one day he'll go like, wow, my dad told me.
He will.
Thank you.
You know he will. That's why you did it.
I believe he will.
I believe he will too. I look back at things like that and I thank my parents. Well, maybe not to their faces. Maybe I should, but deep inside I do. So what was your favorite team? Was it, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 90s, the 2000s? Do you have like a team that you were?
It's a great question. I love baseball, so I watch them all. It's hard to say a team that was terrible was my favorite team, Horace Clark.
Right.
I love the Thurman Munson, Reggie Jackson, Ron Guidry era of the mid to late 70s into the early 80s. But I'd have to say the last 20-year ride where that 1998 team was fucking deadly. That could have been up there in the great. You could make an argument that's the greatest team of all time. They had phenomenal starting pitching, phenomenal relief pitching, and a bunch of patient veteran hitters with some new kids who were total studs. A very nice blend. And then a number four cleanup batter who hit 20, 23 home runs a year. Didn't matter.
Right.
They you can have the best pitcher in the league who was Pedro Martinez at the time, beating you 2-0 or 2-1 in the seventh or eighth inning, and he's up to 109 pitches. They take him out, and then they get to your relief staff, and they beat Pedro 3-2, 4-2.
Right.
So
all right. So that's interesting. I mean, as a guy who's
it's hard not to like Munson,
right?
Guidry, Jackson, that crew, but. I don't know, maybe it's because it was closer that has something to do with it.
More recent, you're saying?
Well,
so
my
tattoos
are a mantle in the middle,
right,
and my two favorite new ones. Now, I didn't include anybody from the 70s here.
Okay.
It's Jeter, Rivera, Mantle, with a Koufax on the bottom away from the Yankees, because
okay.
I love Sandy Koufax.
Okay, wow. So, did you relent and cheer for the Mets in the 80s?
Never. As a child, there were the stumbling, bumbling, adorable, losing Mets with Casey Stengel, who was one of the most charismatic and charming baseball figures in history.
Right.
And as a child, those characteristics eluded me. I didn't get it. I just thought they suck.
You wanted the winning team, not
they
the
They suck.
Idiots.
They're both in New York. And then when I realized they shared the colors of the Dodgers and the Giants.
Right.
And had I been old enough, even though I was here when the Dodgers and the Giants were both here,
right.
Had I been old enough to be 10, 11 years old when all three of them were here, I would have friggin' hated the other two. So the Mets were the representative of the other two, so I hated the Mets.
So 86, you just ignored it, or what?
I was actually, for the only time in my life, thinking of suicide. I was like, God forgive me. I was hoping like maybe both planes crash in a midair collision, so it would be a tie.
Well, but what about like, you know?
I went like this in my head. I went, I'm an American League fan. I gotta go.
Right, right.
I can't root for the Red Sox. I go.
Right.
I'm a New York guy.
Right.
Fuck the National America. I'm not that much of an American League fan because
right.
I love Koufax in National League.
Right.
I love Dick Allen for the National League.
Okay.
And I went. I can't go, come on Mets. I can't. I just couldn't. So I just would like, you know, I just wanted to sort of, you know, like Sue Storm, the invisible girl. I just wanted to be the invisible boy for
you just it. Wanted to, you ignored yeah. the whole, what about, you know, with Strawberry and Cone and Gooding then going to the Yankees?
Gooding? Who's Gooding?
Gooden. Dwight Gooden. Doc.
Just messing with you. Strawberry and Cone.
What was your feeling of them, all of them going to the Yankees after that? Did you like any of them, or were they dead to you because they were...
I like Strawberry. Cone was on five teams.
Yeah.
So Gooden and Strawberry will forever be known as Mets.
Right. That's how I think of them.
Here's my thing. I will root for you if you wear pinstripes, but I won't like you. I don't have to like you. I hated Clemens, but
yeah.
I rooted for him.
Right.
Strawberry and Gooden, I always liked personally. I actually got to meet them for a few minutes. And
yeah.
I like their vibe.
So, all right. You're hardcore, right?
No. It's a business. I realize it's
right,
a business.
Right. It is more than ever now, for sure. So, do you have any parting thoughts or words for the great Derek Jeter?
If I met him, I'd just say, Derek, I'm 60 years old. I've watched baseball since I'm about 7 or 8, and I don't think I've ever been more honored in watching a man play the game I love so dearly. I don't think I've ever been more honored in watching the way a man carries himself and plays the game I love so dearly. And I thank you for putting everything into it for the last 20 years.
You heard it here, and you have his number on your arm.
Got the Yankee hat and bat tattoo, and then I added a couple of numbers around it. Mantle in the middle for my favorite old Yankee, and Jeter and Rivera for my favorite Yankees of the last 20 years. And on the bottom, the top colors are navy blue, as the Yankee colors are. And on the bottom, a slightly lighter blue, is Sandy Koufax, my favorite non-Yankee ever. And I named my son Koufax, Jake Koufax. And Sandy, for those of, the, of you out there that don't know, when I was a little kid, you're very impressionable. And being a Jew is like a very special thing. And if you, this guy says, I'm not pitching in the World Series because of Yom Kippur. I just, you know, now I might go, what? Get the fuck out of here. Get your ass out there and fuck religion.
But Yom when I was Shmum. A kid,
it was very impressive to me. Right. Not only that, as a fan of the sport of baseball, getting to watch him,
right?
It was like getting, it was the equivalent of like, I'm not at the ballet, I'm not into, you know, whatever, but it's like getting to watch the greatest prima ballerina, the greatest soprano, the greatest anything,
right?
In their field. It was like getting to watch him. He was like a level above other human beings. And what was wrong with him physically, he had to retire in the middle of his prime, 31 years old,
wow.
Or 32, in the middle. He had five more prime years. And that injury would have, today, he probably would have missed a few months and had it sculpted.
Surgery, right.
Yeah. He probably would have missed a few months, worked his way back, and been maybe close to his grade again.
Right.
But, in the, you know, you're born when you're born. Those yep. days were those days. Also, he was a basketball player in the University of Cincinnati.
Oh, really?
Absolute
great athlete.
Stud athlete. Jew from Brooklyn.
It happens. Well, that's awesome. And is there anything else that, anything you're doing these days that you want to...
May I mention I'm doing?
You may mention anything.
Yes. At the ripe old age of 60, when most people are getting ready to do nothing and retire as much and do as much nothing as they can in their retirement, I'm working by far the hardest I've ever worked in my life. My wife Zoe and I run this bar, a full-time bar. We raise an 11-year-old boy. I do 5 national radio shows a week in Little Stevens Underground Garage,
right.
Sirius XM 21, Sirius XM Radio. That's 5 nights a week, 8 until midnight Eastern Time. I'm on drive time in LA, which is very impressive.
Oh, wow.
All the cars. People tell me I'm stuck in traffic. I hear you. I feel like I'm back home in New York. I love it.
Well, they shouldn't have moved to LA to begin with, but go on.
That's a whole other. Five radio shows a week, and now a band that basically was doing some reunion shows here and there, and a couple of weeks in Spain once a year. Now we have offers this year for 14 days in the West Coast, 3 weeks all over Europe in 8 different countries, plus a 2.5-week tour of Spain, plus some Midwest shows, plus some Northeast shows, Scandinavian knocking on our door. So.
Well, I have to say this might be the best interview that the Bullpen Betty Show has ever Aww. Had. So I really appreciate that you're
on. If I hear you saying that to someone else.
Well, to date.
None of us are responsible for what happens later.
But I thank you very much, I guess.
Thank you for wanting to interview me. And I also, again, apologize for being so late.
No problem. Thanks a lot.
Oh my God, I think that is the not only the best interview that we have done, because he's actually a Yankee fan.
Our first one?
But I'm not really sure how much better than that we can get. And this is what I mean.
Aim high, come on.
Well, aside from getting, like, you know, Jeter or something himself, we're in his bar. He's like an old New York rocker dude from the Bronx. He loves the Yankees. He's got the tattoo. It's his whole thing. I mean, everything. And he put a Bullpen Betty magnet on his little mini fridge behind the bar.
Well, let's put it this way. Well, we set the bar high, so now we've just got to keep striving, right? But we're not done with him yet. Anyway, we'll bring him back for the walk-off. But before we get to that, let's handle some business, man. Where do they find us?
Do we have business? Oh, that business. Yes, the business of Bullpen Betty can be found on bullpenbetty.com, where you can find a link to our Facebook page, to our Twitter feed and to our Podomatic page.
Most importantly, our Podomatic page. Where all our shows are stored.
Yes, all. This is going to be the 16th.
Is it?
I believe. Yes. And last count, we had over 1,700 downloads or listens, which is not exactly, you know.
We're averaging over 100 people a show.
Right, and so that means that more than me, you, and my mom are listening.
Yeah, Dad. My father keeps it. My father lives in the Dominican Republic. Every now and then he'll hit me on Facebook. So what does Bullpen Betty think about what the Yankees are doing this year?
And do you ask me and then tell him, or do you just answer? Cause
I just tell him, we're doing a show this weekend. I'll let you know. I'll send you a link.
Does he listen?
Yeah, he does, actually. He likes it.
Do we have to translate it into Spanish?
No, my father actually grew up in Little Italy. Speaks better English than both of us.
Does he speak Italian?
He understands a bit. He speaks Spanish.
Did he grow up near Vinny Stigma?
Him and Vinny Stigma went to the same school.
But not at the same time.
No, I think his close. Father and my father had the same teacher, Miss Spiro.
Oh, my God. I guess she's probably not alive anymore.
But they both grew up on Mott Street, which is pretty funny. And for all of you that don't know, Vinny Stigma is from the Agnostic Front. Another New York music icon.
Hardcore maven.
Punk rock icon.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, we're just about ready to get out of here. Why don't we bring Dick back and let him...
Yes, oh, right. Every interviewee gets to pick the walk-off song of the week.
Right.
One day we have to, like, make a compilation of all of our songs.
That'd be kind
of
cool. One day we'll do a... We'll have some party somewhere and we'll have a DJ just mixing all our walk-off songs.
Right, right. It'll be the most, like, insane list.
But anyway, yeah, let me get up again. And Dick will give us his walk-off song of the week.
All right.
So, you know, every show ends with a walk-off song of the week. Do you have...
I got to do the outfit. I didn't put any thought into it except the first song. When the Yankees won the World Series, I came back from the first tour with the Dictators since the first for 18 years, 96. And the Yankees won the World Series that year. And the Dictators came back from a tour of Europe. And I was working in a bar called 2A, which is still there, called Second A.
Upstairs, right?
And we were so happy when he caught that last catch at third base, that third baseman, I forgot his name, was on the team that he went to. And he caught the catch, the ball at third base, and place went ballistic. I played Frank Sinatra's New York, I think like 30 times in a row, as loud as it could be, and everybody was so drunk, and I just dan 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 dan, dan over and over, and no one left.
Nobody yelled at you. Everybody was thrilled that you were playing.
No one left.
Or Blue Eyes.
So that's the song.
Thank you very much, and go Yankees.
Well, you really can't have a better story or a better song than that.
I like it.
Yeah.
First repeat also. First rewind on the Bullpen Betty show.
And apparently he rewound it like 30 times.
Right,
according to his story.
Appropriately enough, it's what we ended our season with last year.
Alrighty. That was a good one. Thanks, Gigo.
Peter Betty.
Long live baseball.
I'll see you soon.
Okay.
Later.
Bye everyone.
Peace.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving. Even today, I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York, New York. I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep and find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap. These little town blues are melting away. I'll make a brand new start of it. In in old New York. If I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere. It's up to you, New York. City that never sleeps, and find I'm a number one, top of the list, king of the hill, a number one. These little town blues, oh, start of it in old New York. And if I can make it there, I'm gonna make it anywhere. It's up to you, New York.